Lunatic Mania!
Well, JJ, that was a stretch to try to connect Outlaw Star with Firefly. What else you got? I heard you mention James Cameron.
Oh, yeah. I can think of at least two things he ripped... borrowed from.
Oh, this I'd like to see.
Avatar?
Okay, you got me there. We all know Dances Within That V copies off of, oh, I don't know. Let me think. Everything? What else is there?
Terminator.
No way. What could have you copied off there?
A little show called The Outer Limits, which you would have seen as a kid.
I saw all those seasons. I don't remember anything fitting Terminator.
Then you weren't paying attention to the episodes Demon with a Glass Hand and Soldier. In fact, that wouldn't be the first time The Outer Limits was copied. Tremors borrowed from the monster from the episode The Invisible Enemy, which I'm sure borrowed from something else.
I don't think you and I saw the same episodes.
Well, let's listen to the guys at Sci-Fi Malady and compare notes afterwards.
Get ready to be humiliated again.
Sci-Fi Malady, Symptom 82. Come with me if you want to copy. So maybe Dork is right. Maybe last week was absolutely a stretch that Joss Whedon was copying from Outlaw Star. And by maybe, I mean 100% absolutely
chance.
Certain.
Yeah, there's not a chance that one was copied.
But that's not going to stop us from continuing with Copycat August and exploring science fiction classics that maybe, just maybe, almost certainly, absolutely were stolen from science fiction classics that came before. In the past on this show, I believe I have said that I think Terminator is a perfect movie. And that could be because James Cameron stole the plot and the basic framework for Terminator from one of the greatest, most prolific science fiction writers in American history, Harlan Ellison.
Scott, I gotta get in the way there. We gotta say allegedly here for legal purposes.
Okay, allegedly, almost certainly, almost positively, for allegedly certain, sure.
Well, didn't
he stole it?
Well, I mean, you mentioned last week, and I didn't really think about it at the time, but you asked if I thought about whether Outlaw Star or Firefly copied off Outlaw Star, and no, I didn't. But I do agree with you that are we building off of something? And if you're building off, it's not really a copy. But this today, you're not really building. It's one thing to take a theme or a trope and run with it. This is taking a theme or a trope and basically just tweaking a name or something else and just really copying it from there. And what I think what we're going to see today, Sickies, is that Terminator... The two episodes that J.J. Abrams did mentioned, The Soldier and Demon with a Glass Hand, James Cameron kind of borrowed from both of them, I think. And I got to remember, too, I got to say one thing, that Demon with a Glass Hand, I first saw, my dad got me the tape one year for Christmas. Yeah, back when VHS was king. And he got me that episode, and along with Invisible Enemy, because when we saw Tremors, he said, yep, that's Invisible Enemy. That's The Outer Limits. And that actually stars Adam West. But that's neither here nor there for today. But he got me that one. And as we were watching it, my dad was like, you're going to see, this is basically where Terminator comes from. So, and after I saw it, all I could think of was, yep.
And so if the discussion of Demon with a Glass Hand and Soldier, and if you've seen those episodes, if they don't convince you, I have a third bombshell to throw in that should put it over the top that we haven't even mentioned yet. That's called a teaser. But I said that Harlan Ellison is one of the most prolific and greatest science fiction writers in American history. And you may be going, who the bleep is Harlan Ellison? Well, if you haven't actually heard of him, you probably have seen his works. Harlan Ellison wrote over 1,700 short stories, novellas, screenplays, comic book scripts, teleplays, and essays. What is he most famous for? a boy and his dog, I have no mouth and I must scream, repent harlequin, as well as the soldier and demon with the glass hand. Oh, and a little episode of Star Trek called The City on the Edge of Forever, which is very often rated as the single best episode of Star Trek ever produced. But Harlan Ellison actually tells you that Gene Roddenberry ruined his screenplay with what he aired on TV.
Okay, but you know what? I don't want to get too buff the beaten path here, but when you say that's the best, can you give us a 1-minute synopsis, Scott? What was that episode about?
Well, I don't know if I agree that it's the best because I'm not sure it's Star Trek in the end, but essentially the Enterprise encounters this mirror. For all purposes, it's a rock on a planet that has kind of like a viewing screen in it that will show you the past.
Oh, yeah, that.
And
yeah.
You can step through it and travel backwards in time to any point. Well, Dr. McCoy has accidentally shot himself up with a full hypo spray full of a medication that turns you completely insane. And McCoy breaks free of his restraints and runs through the Guardian. By doing so, he's changed time to allow Hitler to win World War II. Oh, well, you know, hey, the Germans win World War II.
Wait a minute.
Never see that
happen. It's Star Trek. Star Trek? Nazis? Yeah.
Corey, you're not here this week.
Oh, no. I filled in the Corey spot.
But at any rate, we go backwards in time, and McCoy running through has the Germans win World War II, and there's no Starfleet. None of them exist. But they're protected somehow by the Guardian's temporal wake, and they've ask the Guardian to replay time again. And Spock replays it on his tricorder and guesses at almost the exact right moment to step back through the Guardian into history. And so at any rate, they then figure out that the reason that the past was altered is McCoy saved a woman that Kirk has fallen in love with from getting hit by a car. Hey, George McFly. But saves her, and she should have died, but because she doesn't die, she keeps America from joining World War II, and Germany wins World War II. And, you know, the rest is alternate history. So you can see a theme here with Harlan Ellison. He likes time travel.
Yeah, he seems to like it quite a bit.
So how would you rank it then, Scott?
You know, I'm not going to go into it. It's a very good episode, but I don't think it's one of the best episodes. But I'll say it's one of the better episodes of Star Trek.
Okay.
Give you one more thing about Harlan Ellison, and I thought this was a fun fact. He was dubbed in 2017 by Wired Magazine, sci-fi's most controversial figure. And let me give you an example of who this jerk was, because man, did he have a temper and could he be controversial? He once had some grievances with a film company, and as part of his contract dispute, mailed them 213 bricks. Postage due.
What?
But that wasn't enough. After mailing the publisher 213 bricks, postage due, so they had to pay it, he followed it up by sending them a dead gopher in fourth class mail.
Why?
Because he was mad over the fulfillment of his contract.
Full
Could you imagine?
Mail?
You're
oh, that
so mad.
Bad.
Who thinks of 213 bricks as a solution? Who's like, I'm going to get them back.
The hamster.
I got a pile of bricks in the backyard I got to get rid of.
He sent it postage due, so they had to pay for it by weight. It's brilliant.
Yeah.
But what made me think
the
that he's even more insane.
Worse. The hamster's worse because
he sent him a dead gopher.
Which are with both class. Imagine how bad that stunk by the time it finally got there.
A dead gopher? And did he find a dead gopher or did he kill the gopher first?
Either way, I feel sorry for the secretary who had to open that package.
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
This is a class 10 jerk we're dealing with here, sickies.
Oh.
He might have been the first sickie.
He might have been a genius, but boy, did he have some trouble.
So keep this in mind when James Cameron calls him a nuisance and doesn't think highly of him and says it was a nuisance lawsuit in his defense. So let's talk about the controversy here. So Harlan Ellison, he had found out from one of his friends.
You know what, Scott? Actually, I'm sorry to interrupt. Can we first? Do you think we should talk about the episodes first?
No.
Okay.
No.
All right.
I think we should talk about this.
All right. Cede the floor.
So I got to find back to where I was now at this point. But essentially, you've only heard. So when you watch Terminator, at the end of it, you will see an acknowledgement to Harlan Ellison. And the only person who's ever really told the story of this is Harlan Ellison. And allegedly, he got paid $65,000 out of court to drop his lawsuit.
They settled, Zimpla.
They settled out of court. So here is from an IO9 article. The way Ellison tells it, he began hearing rumblings during the production of Terminator that it was sounding a bit like his Outer Limits episode Soldier, which Ellison had adapted from his 1957 story Soldier from Tomorrow. Ellison claims that his request to read the script were denied and that he wasn't invited to the critics' screenings, which he was a critic. When he managed to sneak into one of the screenings, he felt that the first few minutes of Terminator were identical to Soldier. Continues, if true, another aspect of Ellison's claim is more compelling. He says that he was contacted by a friend at Starlog who said the magazine was receiving pressure from Cameron's representatives to excise a quote from an interview Cameron gave Starlog. According to Ellison, in the original transcript, Cameron says that he got the idea from Terminator from a handful of Outer Limits episodes. Ellison also claims that another acquaintance reported to him that he'd heard Cameron boast he'd ripped off a couple of Harlan Ellison's stories in writing Terminator.
Wow, that's a very bold thing to say. I mean, even in court, when you're going to kind of a claim, you better have substantial backing to prove it.
Well, for one, this was settled out of court. There might be a reason for that because, A, they probably didn't want to go to court, and also the evidence he has sounds a lot like hearsay, but...
Well, I clearly didn't want to go into court, but... You know, when you settle out of court, one of two things is happening. Either A, you're just trying to get this nuisance out of the way, or B, they have something of substance and you don't want it going before a judge.
Now,
in this case, we're not really sure which one it was.
Yeah, especially after hearing the story about how many bricks and a dead gopher, at that point, you kind of go, he's a nuisance, so you might just be trying to settle. So I don't know.
Harlan Ellison was constantly fighting for writers' rights in Hollywood, basically saying that don't work for free and don't let them take from you without giving you credit.
I get that.
And this wasn't the first lawsuit that he'd ever filed, and it was pretty much known that, you know, Harlan Ellison could be a first-class a-hole when he wanted to be.
Sure. But the thing is, there is real substance here. I mean, again, despite the court... Scott, you even said when you watch these episodes, it's easy to draw the parallel. It's very it's not a stretch.
So I think we should start with Demon with Glass Hand. I think Soldier. We should start with Soldier because Harlan Ellison is on record on his own website as saying, no, he didn't steal Demon with a Glass Hand. He stole my other film or my other story, Soldier.
Which is weird because even you admitted, Scott, that Demon with a Glass Hand seems much more of a copy than Soldier's copy is like the first 5 minutes.
I actually think that he took three Harlan Ellison creations and compiled them into Terminator.
Oh, really?
Yes. So, you know, we're not going to recap Terminator, but essentially we know what Terminator is. Yeah. The original Terminator. Yeah.
There's even a symptom
two men,
it.
A cyborg and a human get sent back in time. They're fighting a war in the future. And the cyborg has to kill Sarah Connor, who is the father of John Connor, the mother of John Connor, the ultimate hope of humanity. She's not Mrs. Cartman, who's also Eric's father. This soldier has to defend the final hope of humanity. And you also have a soldier out of time, and no one believes the story.
Right.
So when we start with Soldier... Rage Master, you want to take this thing away and give us a brief recap of start with Soldier and the basic premise?
Sure, it's real easy. There's two soldiers trained. They were basically bred for war in a test tube. It's what, 1800 years in the future. There's been some kind of astronomical destruction in that Earth is not the same planet anymore and resources are scant. So it's probably a war for resources. And both sides are very much just trained for war. Like the soldier movie from Kurt
Russell.
There
is the enemy and not enemy. Yeah,
that's it. And the beginning of the movie starts with these guys, these soldiers decked out and ordered go kill the enemy. So they're running across no man's land by themselves.
Who ordered them?
Some general. We don't know. It was
probably
through their
cat.
It was through their headset.
It was probably the cat.
Yeah. Their CO.
The cat.
So they're charging at each other. And then these lasers crisscross and they wind up getting stuck in a time loop and they go back to 1950, 60, whatever in US, where one of the soldiers gets caught in the temporal wave, which boy, in modern special effects, it would have looked better. And the other one winds up in a street corner and decides to blow up a cop car for no apparent reason. But then he loses his helmet and he can't stand the sound because he's been trained to have sensitive, hypersensitive hearing, that he has these sound dampeners on his helmet with a radio. Anyway, they put him in a lunatic's asylum and they hire a doctor, a speech pathologist, to try to figure out what he's saying. And it turns out it's English. It's just a different kind. It's modern. It's slang for his era. And over the course of trying to get to know this guy, he discovers that he's from the future and decides to do a very irrational thing. And that is try to teach him the difference between war and peace. Now, Scott, you'll pick the theme if you want.
It's between love and hate.
Yeah, it's your shtick. So we'll get to that in a sec if you want. But the point is, he tries to teach him how to not be a killing machine. And it gets to the point where he decides, well, I'm going to take him home and have him live a normal life with my wife and kids, which, wow. I mean, they ham up the 1950s thing. Remember you said this in Lost in Space, the original, to show the perfect family?
Oh, man, the family take lines that, up at the door to meet dad when he comes home from work.
Even he comes home with the armed guy with the gun, they line up.
Now, to be fair, this is how, like, 50s, 60s culture was bent. When you look at the handbooks on how to be, like, a good wifey, part of it was look nice and come to the door.
Kids,
and
quickly! Line up at the door. You know your father doesn't like it when you're not lined up at the door to greet him.
Now, granted, my wife greets me and I greet her when we come to the door, but it's not.
Kids, line up at the door when your 77-year-old father comes through the door.
Oh, yeah. Rob the cradle, Dad. Rob. So anyway, he comes home with this soldier and it goes as expected with everyone freaked out. Eventually, the soldier runs away, gets a gun because he can't shut off his war capacity. The other soldier gets out of the temporal loop, goes hunting down his enemy, and it ends in a final clash in the guy's house, and the two soldiers kill each other.
There may or may not be a psionic cat talking to them.
Oh, yeah. Cats are used as a way of transmitting information and detecting other soldiers.
In the future, you can think speak and cats can communicate information, or the CO can tap into the cat's brain.
Yeah. And the cats do reconnaissance.
Yes.
So
basically,
the cats do reconnaissance.
Hence why the soldier is talking to a cat.
Yeah.
So,
and so that's the basic story. And really, when you look at it, it's only like the first 10 minutes where you can actually see, theme was taken from here.
So the final thought also, maybe.
Yeah.
That to me is more of a Terminator 2 thing, though, honestly.
What's that part
when he said, did the soldier come to love and want to protect, or was it just his nature to kill? Did Arnold in Terminator 2 come to love John Connor and Sarah Connor, or was it his programming?
That's a good point.
Because it's harder to ask that question about Kyle Reese. You believe Kyle Reese loved Sarah Connor. So if you ask, did Kyle Reese come to love Sarah Connor, the answer is going to be yes.
Well, he loved her before he went there.
But the question is there. Yes, he fell in love with her before he went there. So where are the similarities in this? Well, I mean, first off, there's the obvious. You've got a dystopian future where mankind is degenerated into constant war. And you have, in this case, you have soldiers grown in test tubes and fish hatcheries, basically.
Yeah.
And told to World War One charge at each other.
Right. And all they do is fight. There is the enemy and not enemy. And the only thing you do to the enemy is kill the enemy. There's no other communication with the enemy.
Well, and there's war for resources. There's the scene where he's in the soldier's in the kitchen rummaging through the trash. And he's complaining about wasted resources because clearly in this battlefield, every scrap of food, no matter how old, is needed.
Yeah. Well, also, it's has a lot to do with my thought is, again, Corey's not here to bring up this, but sounds like fascism won in the future because a lot to do with the state.
Yeah. He goes on about the state is ever there's enemy, no enemy. The state is every when they ask him about his parents, he gives the name of his test tube that he grew out of. Yep. And then just says the state is everything.
It's very Machiavellian. I don't know if it's so much. It's very Machiavellian.
Yeah.
Well, and you know, that's the kind of thing sci-fi gets into. This, how much do we get? If they're not bashing corporations, they're bashing some kind of autocracy. So
that is a departure from Terminator a bit in that it's a Machiavellian government, because in the future in Terminator, you simply have Skynet machines versus the humans trying to live.
Right. Well, and you know, Scott, you brought up an interesting point. I personally thought this was ham-fisted implementation, but Scott brought up a good theme that I thought, well, that makes it good despite the implementation. And that is a really a post-war theme that, well, Scott, I'll let you do it.
You know,
you're the deep meaning guy.
Yeah. It's actually the soldier is a wonderful story that is dealing with post-traumatic stress before they really knew what post-traumatic stress was. I'd argue to anyone that it's really a treatment of that, but then Harlan Ellison wouldn't have been able to tell you that when he wrote it. You're talking about World War II had ended 20 years ago. You had veterans coming back from the Korean War. You were starting to get involved in the Vietnam War. You'd seen a lot of war in the last 20 years if you grew up in that time. And you wondered, you really might have wondered if the world was heading towards a place where you would be in a constant state of war and you'd have to grow soldiers to sustain that state of war. You didn't know what the end of the Cold War was going to be at that point.
Or if there was going to be end of it.
And you had to wonder what happened when you brought these soldiers back to society. And it really is asking a question that if you trained a man from birth to be a soldier, or if you trained the perfect soldier and you trained him to be the ultimate killer, could you put him back into society? And I think that's a lot of what this episode is asking. But at the end, it's also asking about humanity. Are we human because we're human? Or are we human only because of nurture?
It's nature versus nurture.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it's an excellent treatment of that. And it also touches a lot on post-traumatic stress and reintegrating soldiers into society. Unfortunately, the conclusion that this episode gives you is that you can't reintegrate the soldier into society. And that also dovetails nicely with Terminator because you see Kyle Reese struggle with that.
Well, because he was bred in a war situation where all he was. I like the good example of that is the scene where he goes grocery shopping, comes back to the motel, and Sarah says, what do we got? And he says, we're making plastique. It's a bit more stable. I learned how to make it as a kid.
Yeah, Kyle Reese doesn't know how to be anything other than a soldier. And if he'd have lived, well, who knows if he could have adapted to not living in a constant state of war. He's never known anything else.
Probably not.
And you kind of see Kyle Reese struggle with that throughout that movie.
For that simple fact that it's the same idea where it was like, well, you know nothing else. Would you be able to learn something else? Yep. It's like teaching a old dog new tricks.
So aside from the obvious of sending two soldiers back through time from the future in a war that they're fighting against each other to finish that war out in the past, which happens in The Soldier. And you have Kyle Reese being, you know, the man who can't adapt to not being a soldier. You also have the fact that first chase scene where, you know, when Kyle Reese arrives, he gets chased down by the police and arrested, and no one will believe his story. He's a soldier from the future, and no one believes that.
Well, of course, he's taken to a nut house, but I mean,
that's what happens to Quarlo here. Yeah. He's taken to a nut house, and they give him a shrink to work with him.
Well, and that, but you know what? That's how much of that is ripping off of a story idea or reality? Because that's pretty much what would happen. If I showed up claiming to be a cyber knight from the year 2041 fighting the forces of the coalition, and I really meant it, they'd put me away.
The question is, did you have a big Bertha?
What happened was I got bored trying to park it.
I was going
to
ask.
So I just jumped into a dimensional rift.
Would you like to hire security for your big Bertha?
What happened was
to just throw a grenade in it and finish it off?
While we were going through that process, a dimensional rift opened.
How much security?
And I decided that I could stay here and try to park the big Bertha or jump through the unknown rift. Nuts to the big Bertha, and I jumped through the rift. I still don't regret my decision.
That's an inside joke. Of an inside joke.
That goes back to a while. Yeah,
we're not going to explain it all. But,
no.
You know, I think if you just stopped with Soldier, and I think it's really interesting that Harlan Ellison says that it's Soldier that James Cameron stole. If you just stopped with Soldier, I don't think you have a compelling case.
Not really.
No,
Maybe James Cameron, having grown up watching sci-fi, had this idea marinating in the back of his head, and he even forgot where the influence from it came from. Or maybe he remembered that he had seen this episode and he thought it was really cool about having time-traveling soldiers.
But that's just one element. That's not enough to that's not enough to say he ripped the whole thing.
Well, that brings us to the next one then.
But then you got to move to Demon with a Glass Hand. And Demon with a Glass Hand, to me, is the more compelling story.
Oh, yeah.
It starts with a man who has no memory and says that he's been born 10 days ago as a full-grown man, and his name is Trent. You find out very quickly that there are other agents looking for Trent to kill Trent because they need to get his glass hand, which is only, essentially a computer brain.
Which we don't. Well, yeah, because it's got two fingers and he keeps talking to it, asking, what do I do? What do right. I do? And it gives him instructions.
And the brain, his glass hand is incomplete. It's computer brain. When he gets all five fingers, then it will have all the knowledge of the world. But in the meantime, the aliens that have taken over the world in the future are trying to get it from him so that they have all the knowledge because they know he's a threat. What it comes down to is Trent is the last hope for humanity. These aliens invaded and every single human has disappeared other than Trent. And only Trent has the knowledge of where they went and how to save them. But he can only get it if he completes his glass hand and has all of the knowledge that the computer brain
and these
contains.
And these aliens have the fingers and they're searching for him. They're trapped in this warehouse. Right.
They have the three, but they need his glass hand. So they have part of it and he has the other part. And they know where to go find him. And they're sending people backwards through time to go kill him. Or to kill him and take the glass hand to ensure their victory over humanity.
And the only way to get,
sounds familiar.
And
somehow.
The only way to get rid of the aliens is rip their necklaces off, which are keeping them bound to the past. And yes. Then they go flipping right back. But the thing is, when he gets all the fingers, he finds out that he's actually a robot and the humanity in the future to get rid of the aliens unleashed a nuclear disease, a nuclear holocaust to kill the aliens. But humanity has somehow managed to digitally encode themselves into this robot. So all of that's left of humanity is residing inside this robot. And his goal is to stay alone for the next, 10,000 years or whatever?
It's like 1,500 years.
Yeah. Until the aliens die off and then the radiation dissipates.
Correct.
So he is alone. I don't know what to say. A robot is the savior of humanity.
So here's the deal. You have, where is the similarity between Demon with a Glass Hand and Terminator? I think this one's pretty obvious. You have a cyborg that is traveling back through time.
Also a cyborg that's kind of human.
He's very human. He doesn't human. Even know he's a robot till the very end.
This is different because Arnold knows he's a cyborg the entire time. But here's the real key. He is the only hope for humanity. And if the time-traveling aliens kill him, they win and humanity dies.
Correct.
Terminator, John Connor, is the only hope for humanity. And the time-traveling sentient machines have determined that if they kill Sarah Connor, preventing the birth of John Connor,
they
will kill all of humanity.
Yep.
That's pretty important. You start combining this with the aspects of Soldier that have been stolen.
And suddenly you get a lot more of Terminator.
Well, if I can add one more element, too. The reason Skynet sent the Terminator back is because the humans had won. Kyle Reese says, we smashed their defensive grid. We already got through them. We won. This was their last Hail Mary. This was Skynet's last Hail Mary play. And same thing with the aliens. They're going back in time because they lost. They can't keep the Earth because this radiation disease is killing them. So they need to find this and capture this guy. Otherwise, their future's toast. Much like Skynet's future is toast if he doesn't go back and stop the humans from rising up.
Now, this one, Demon with the Glass Hand.
If you took it by itself, you probably couldn't say
it. It's enough.
There's
far
a
as
lot
I'm
here.
Concerned.
I still don't think that you can take this one by itself and say he stole Terminator from this. But the concept starts to get, boy, we have a very similar concept here. Now we're just going to tweak it a bit. It's not aliens.
It's
sentient machines. And humanity isn't sending back a cyborg to save them. They're sending back a human to protect the mother of the future savior of humanity. Mm-hmm. You just changed a bit. You took the basic concept and you changed it. But it's still not the same. It's a variation on a theme. You may have stolen the theme, but you have a variation on a theme.
It's very close.
I will also say that when we're just discussing Demon with the Glass Hand, I thought it was an excellent piece of science fiction, especially for episodic television running 51 minutes.
No, I loved it.
Does it have a deeper meaning? Not really. It's not, and it's written by Harlan Ellison again.
Wait a minute. Let me jump into the Scott seat here a minute. Deeper meaning? In the future, humanity is so desperate to survive, it's willing to resort to the desperate measures. So how desperate are we? How far will we go to survive? Because they unleash a nuclear disease, I think they call it, on the Earth to survive and somehow encode themselves into a robot. They're that desperate. So what are we willing to do?
But I will say, it's simply an enjoyable piece of science fiction that is well-written, well-paced, honestly. It's slow, but it's well-paced. It never lags to the point where you're going, oh my God, is something happening? But it never speeds up to the point that it feels rushed. And I think, you know, you start to see some of Harlan Ellison's, let's say his wheelhouse. He likes time travel.
Yeah.
He likes time travel where time can get screwed up. And you're impacting the future by your actions in the past.
Yeah.
He likes these things. Whether you're talking about Sitting on the Edge of Forever, you're talking about these two stories. Now we're looking at a very short synopsis of Harlan Ellison. He wrote 1,700 stories. Obviously, I can probably pick any number of them and have them all dovetail nicely together.
But the biggest ones, the biggest hits.
You start to see that there's a little bit of a playbook, maybe, for Ellison. But they're all well-written, entertaining stories to watch, and they all have similar pacing to them if you watch them all.
Now, again, if
they never rush.
If you just took one of these and said, Terminator is stolen from this one, you can't really, I don't think you could pull that. But now you got two. And when you put both of these together, they start filling in on each other, and you start going, oh,
well. I said I've got a bombshell to drop, right?
And I want to hear this bombshell, because right now we already have a pretty compelling case, in my opinion, for what's going on. I want to hear this bombshell and see where.
Well, remember that a friend, in the IO9 story, it was said that a friend told Harlan Ellison that he also ripped off a couple of Ellison's short stories. That friend is Tracy Torme, who's a screenwriter for Hollywood and wrote a few Star Trek episodes early in the first couple seasons of Next Generation. Mm-hmm. Tracy Torme told Harlan Ellison that he stole a couple short stories. What is never mentioned, and this is the one that I think puts it over the top, is the Harlan Ellison 70s novel, I Have No Mouth and I Must Scream. This story is that after the Third World War started, three major powers, China, Russia, and America, find that the war is so complex they cannot handle it with just people trying to program it, so they build giant computers to handle all the tactics. The story takes place 109 years after the complete destruction of human civilization, where the Cold War entered into a world war fought between China, Russia, and the United States. Each of them developed a supercomputer. However, the supercomputer, which was called an AM for Allied Master Computer and then Adaptive Manipulator, eventually becomes Aggressive Menace. Well, one day, one of the three computers became self-aware and absorbed the other two and took control of the entire war, and it carried out campaigns of mass genocide, killing off all but four men and one woman.
Wow, that is a bombshell.
Now, put the three together, and what do you have?
Terminator.
I've got a cyborg, I've got a human soldier traveling back in time.
And an AI taking over, yeah.
The cyborg in one of these, you know, is the only hope for humanity, and I stole a novel about an AI taking over and destroying all of humanity on its own.
Scott, I was sold on just Demon with a Glass Hand after my dad and I talked about it and saw it, but these two things the soldier and now this bombshell, James Cameron, I like what you do, but that... And the other thing I was going to mention, too, at the end of Demon with a Glass Hand, you kind of feel bad for this sad robot that kind of is left to be by himself. Like, the woman he befriends has to abandon him because she knows everything about him. Same thing with Terminator 2. Well, do you feel bad for Arnold at the end? You feel bad for Sarah? She knows what's coming. So she has to be alone there. But wow. And now when you consider Avatar, it's almost like, wow, I understand why Avatar came out this way. James Cameron is the ultimate synthesizer.
Yeah, he's... If you just took one of these three, I mean, that last one, that story by itself, I might be able to definitely make a case that's Terminator right there.
And when did that novel come out?
In the 70s?
70s, okay.
Yeah.
So that. So even, here's the problem. Even if James said, that's not true, it's there. So it's another one of those things where you put it out there and it makes me wonder, was it just the case they didn't want this going before a judge?
You got off cheap with $65,000 in 1984. Yeah.
You made out.
Now, again, I didn't know that bombshell was coming and you did good there, because before I thought, this was probably just settled out of case because court because, you know, they wanted to get rid of it.
Move on.
Right. In this case, I'm starting to go, they didn't want to make it to court because they would have lost.
This doesn't, this was, you know what this makes me think of? The White Wolf, World of Darkness story, Love of Monsters and Underworld.
Yep.
Where they settle out of court because Sony was like, crap, we really did just kind of rip off a role-playing game setting.
Keep in mind as well that Harlan Ellison was a registered, credentialed movie critic. And he could not get access to come to the screening.
That's damning evidence, right?
Nor would they give him access to the script when his attorney called for access because they had heard that it might have been lifted from his works. They did everything they could to keep him from seeing this.
Yeah, I mean, the evidence is continuing to pile up. I mean, last week we saw there was barely a shred of evidence you could point to that those two were. This time, we are piling up we're backing a dump truck up and just dumping the evidence now.
Terminator goes, din, 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 din. And Ellison's works go, din, 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 din.
It really
is. There's not even any difference.
No, it really is a case of anything. There's no difference here.
It really is a case here, Sickies, of the fact that, of the fact that the last week's symptom was just stark coincidence. Today's symptom is stark copy because, wow. And you know what? It kind of makes me just a teeny bit annoyed because James Cameron is on record saying superhero movies are not groundbreaking, not doing anything exceptional. And he's right. But to hear it coming from him, it's like, then again, anything you did groundbreaking is kind of merging what anyone else already did.
So you know,
you just added more production value.
Right. So you know what I'm going to do, guys? I'm working on my new script idea and story idea, and it's going to have a race of cybernetic aliens that have a hive mind.
Okay.
But they're going to be fighting this warrior race of aliens who are all consumed about dignity and courage. And will fight, they're a very martial race.
This isn't Star Trek, though.
And they're going to be fighting that war. But there's also going to be this organization of women with borderline psionic powers that have access to memories all the way back to their genetic ancestors to the dawn of time. But the key wild card in this entire war is one man who can leap through time within the existence of his own life into different bodies to set right events that got slightly sideways. And he's going back to try to undo the events that lead to this war and undo the damage. And it's a contest to see who's going to win. But in the end, what happens is this Frenchman with a British accent who happens to be close to his 60s gets on a podium and speechifies in a way that shames everyone into declaring peace.
What's it going to be?
Original.
And what's the name of this? What's the name of this brilliant masterpiece?
With his unemotional android sidekick who longs to be human and just wants one good belly laugh.
Okay, what's the name of this thrilling sci-fi epic?
This original sci-fi epic.
Totally original.
Totally original.
Desert Star Negotiation Leap.
Ooh.
Wow. That's I
don't know.
I've never seen anything like that.
Oh, did I mention that the galaxy has a critical shortage of a necessary drug for faster than light travel?
No,
and the whole war is over controlling that drug.
I've never heard of this ever before.
I might have to suggest a shorter title just because it might fit better on the billboards, but it's a totally original idea.
Have you ever heard of this idea, Frank Herbert Roddenberry?
No, it is completely original.
Yeah. As we Yeah.
It seems to me...
I'm going to hire Scott Bakula to play the lead of the time-traveling guy.
It seems to me we've pretty much wrapped up, Sickies, that if you don't see the point now, I don't know whatever other evidence we could put out there to show that this is copycat worthy of Copycat August.
Now I have to play devil's advocate, though, and I have to ask the question I've been asking all month.
Yep.
I really do.
Does that make it bad?
Does it matter? Because in the end... Is this actually plagiarism, or is this what Ragemaster said, a synthesis, a synthesizing of ideas to tell an original story? Because in I Have No Mouth and I Must Scream, the computers win. I mean, they kill everyone but four men and one woman. And then in, or maybe it's the other way around. It's not in I Have No Mouth and I Must Scream about sending someone backwards in time to save the protector, the future protector of humanity, so that humanity can win. In Demon with a Glass Hand, it's not about a sentient machine. It's about invading aliens. And the key there is simply to have humanity preserved in the cyborg until after the plague runs its course, so that the human race can be repopulated out of their stored electronic state on a copper wire. And then in Soldier, it's not about a computer, and it's not about saving the future of humanity or protecting anybody. So in all three of these, individually, uniquely in and of themselves, you don't get the story of Terminator. You have to take an aspect of each, synthesize them together, and then the character of John Connor is wholly original. And the character of Sarah Connor is completely original. You stole Skynet. You might have stole the Terminator as the demon with the glass hand, but twisted him around and combined him with the cyborg in that and the aliens to get one character. And you might have borrowed Kyle Reese from Quarlo.
Oh, me. Yeah. I can answer. Here's my answer. Yes, it is a copycat for this reason. It's one thing to take a couple elements and expand on them. It's another thing to rip off multiple things from one, because if you took away one of these elements, you wouldn't have Terminator.
I'm going to disagree with you.
If you took away one of these elements, it wouldn't work. It's one thing if you had just taken Soldier, took the idea of Soldier out of time, and then ran in a completely different direction. I'd say what you said, Scott, he's taking something that's been established and putting his spin on it. That's fine. But when you're saying, well, I need to take that and that and that and that, and I'm going to put my own little tweak on it, but I need all these for that tweak to work. Now it's getting, you've taken too much is what I'm saying. You've taken too much.
You took it all from the same person.
Yeah,
exactly. Well, yes. That's the other problem. It's not like you're borrowing an element from a fairy tale that's been used since time immemorial. Like with Star Wars or something. This is, you've heard it here,
gentlemen. 1977 is time immemorial.
Yeah, exactly.
If you're borrowing from Star Wars.
No. What I mean is fairy tales from the past.
Okay, I got
taking
you.
Tropes or elements from multiple things that have been going
just
on for
years.
Just the
way you said that made me think of you were borrowing from Star Wars.
Well, because you weren't listening then. But it's one thing if you combine tropes and whatnot, but when you take stories from the same guy, and if you remove one of them, it doesn't work anymore. You probably took more than you should have. You've bitten off more than you could have chewed.
Thomas, you were going to disagree?
Yes, I'm going to disagree, absolutely. Because that just, in a way, I do agree, because yes, you have to look at it and say, he definitely stole some things. Absolutely. There's no way you can't look at that and say yes. My thing is, he stole, if he just had taken them from all one of his books or one of his movies, you know, series or whatever, that would be different. But since this is multiple different, you know, series, different shows, you know, it's two different episodes and a book that we just mentioned here. And probably maybe somewhere else. I don't know. But since there's three different points here, and he took parts of those three and then added some of his own stuff, I don't think it's 100% copy. Now, there's elements copied, but not the full thing. If you took parts from Shakespeare, you took some of Macbeth, and then you took some of Hamlet, and you took some of Romeo and Juliet, and then you mixed those together, would that be copying?
Yes.
West Side Story?
Yes.
The Star Trek episode, The Conscience of the King?
Well, I'm asking, is that, though, is that a complete copy, or is that changing it? Or I'm saying he copied elements, so, absolutely copied a bunch of elements.
Well, he took, he took a lot of themes and said, I'm going to tell a story by mashing these themes together.
Yeah.
So let me ask this question another way. Hypothetically, James Cameron was a science fiction fan, grew up watching The Outer Limits.
Yep.
Read some Harlan Ellison novels.
For sure.
Is it possible that unwittingly and subconsciously he started combining these disparate elements into a story in his own head?
I'm going to say no, for the simple fact that they kept the script away from
that it was bouncing. Yeah, well, he realized it at the end. Maybe he realized it after he started creating it and he'd written this script and he came up with this treatment and he had this idea for this story of Terminator. And as he's writing it down, he gets to the point at the end and he goes, well, I see where my muse for this was. I took three different Ellison stories and combined them into one. Is it, I mean, because honestly, if I tried to start writing something tomorrow, when I was done with it, I could probably look back and realize where I had lifted elements of that story from science fiction that I had watched many years ago, or read. I may have forgotten reading the story that I lifted it from.
Which still, well, in that case, it would still indict him on this case because
sure.
The only difference is one is he deliberately did it. The other one is whoopsie. And I'm not arguing either way on this case because I can't verify. But what I can say is a rippage was going on. A copying was going on, whether willingly, unwillingly, knowingly, unknowingly. And obviously it was realized by him some point because they settled out of court. That settlement could not just have been, I want to get rid of the nuisance. It clearly was. Well, yeah, I want to get rid of the nuisance, of course.
I don't want to get mailed a dead gopher.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. I don't want to have to
I think for this
bricks.
One, I think he'd up his ante and do like a dead skunk or something. But that's the
mails
point.
Ships him a whole dead horse.
I want to get
just
rid
the
of
the horse's head.
Yeah. I want to get rid of the nuisance.
You know that whole building? I'm going to ship it brick by brick to you.
How would you like bags of concrete? But I think, he definitely...
What's in the box? It's a slaughtered cow.
Hope you like beef. So I think, obviously get rid of the nuisance, but also one of those things of, if we don't get rid of this now and this goes before a judge, we might be in a lot more trouble. So
I think he got off cheap for $65,000.
I would say so.
And I'm going to say, if I'm drawing a conclusion here, James Cameron knew what he was doing. He was very much, he sat there and he said, hey, we've got these two Ellison stories and there's some really cool elements here. And I'm going to take a bit of this and a bit of this and a bit of this third thing here, throw them in a blender, add the unique concept of Sarah Connor and John Connor, and we'll get Arnold Schwarzenegger to play the time-traveling cyborg killer robot, and I've got this awesome movie. And I think he took these... I think he definitely took... I think Kyle Reese is out of The Soldier. And I think The Demon with the Glass Hand is entirely where The Terminator comes from, or the idea of The Terminator, especially with the idea that... You know, you got to travel backwards in time to kill the only hope of humanity. And I think definitely he took that. And then he took the Skynet idea from there. But as I've said before, that's not an original idea with Ellison. Frank Herbert had that idea, though not fully developed, with Dune.
Yeah.
And that in and of itself is not an original. But when you combine those three things, man, you got to sit there and you got to, did George Cameron still James Cameron still come up with something original? Yes, Terminator is something original. The fact that he, in my mind, well, it's mostly original. The fact that he, in my mind, combined three Harlan Ellison stories doesn't change the fact that Terminator, to me, is an example of an almost perfect movie. Terminator is an amazing action movie. The pacing is perfect throughout all of it. It almost never drags. There's a human element to it, and it works great as a standalone movie, and it works to establish a sequel.
Well, absolutely.
And there's nothing that we've discussed today that's going to make me enjoy Terminator less the next time I watch it.
That's a key I wanted to bring up, Scott, that do I think he copied more than he should have? Yes. However, if you were to say, so you think differently about Terminator now, call me a hypocrite, but no. I don't.
I guess I should clarify, because people screaming at me, how can you say Terminator's original? It's not original.
Yeah.
Terminator is a somewhat original concept. It's an original synthesizing of stolen concepts.
Right. But doesn't ruin one and two for me. Three is destroyed. Genesis was worse. And somehow they made, what was the one in the future? Salvation. Somehow they made that worse.
We've talked about this. Well, anything that comes after Terminator 2 is just bad.
Because Cameron wasn't touching it.
Here's the thing. In this case, for sure, he stole some stuff. But we're at the point where nothing's original. 100% original. Really.
No, but I think there's a way of being clever about it, or just saying this is a trope that's been going on for time immemorial. Well, it's my turn to take a crack at it.
I'm not defending him here. I'm not. I'm saying he stole quite a bit.
I think here's the important thing is, that he may have stolen the concepts or the underlying archetypes, maybe, the ideas for his characters. He may have stolen all of those from Ellison, and I think he did. But the story itself is not so much stolen. It unfolds in a narrative and a plot way that is different from anything that Ellison is telling you in any of these three.
That is true.
You can't match them up plot point for plot point.
No, but you
can. The closest you can come, and why Ellison says he stole the soldier, is probably that opening scene in the soldier lined up against the opening scenes in the Terminator is as close as you come to being action for action.
But if it's just one of those things, if we change the name here, it's totally different. Well, no, it's basically the same logo, just because you put a line here instead of there. But again, that doesn't destroy the movie for me. In no way do I suddenly think Terminator 1 or 2 was bad by any stretch.
It's still an excellent piece of storytelling, and it's still Terminator remains an excellent film. It's well written and it's well directed.
It's a good saga.
And it's not plagiarism, but you are definitely you can't give James Cameron visionary credit for this, for coming up with the concept, because he didn't come up with the concept.
Well, that would be academically plagiarism.
Conceptually, this is stolen. The concept here, he pieced it together, as we said, new drinking game every time I say synthesized, or one of us does. But yes, that's what he did. It's a synthesis of three
Let's
concepts.
Let's not do
from
that
Ellison.
For legal reasons. You guys will all be dead.
His Raving Lunatic Media does not recommend you play the Raving Lunatic Media drinking game. But you have a nice buzz going on right now if you did.
Yeah. I think we kind of wrapped up our points on that, huh?
I think we're at that time where I tell you that if you have thoughts on this, you can email us at contact@ravinglunaticmedia.com. You can leave us a message on Twitter @SciFiMalady on Twitter, or you can go to our website and leave us comments below this episode @ravinglunaticmedia.com.
Come with us if you want to stay sick.
Raving Lunatic Media! .com